Have you ever stopped to think about, say, your cooking pan? You've got this shiny metal part, right? But then the handle is maybe wood or plastic.
Yeah.
Or think about an old light bulb, how that tiny little wire inside lights up a whole room. It's kind of amazing.
It really is. And it's not random. These materials are chosen for a reason.
Exactly. So today we're doing a deep dive into the world of metals and nonmetals.
Mm-hmm.
We want to unpack what makes them different, fundamentally, how they work, why we use them everywhere. And this is really a recap. You know, we're pulling out the most important bits from the chapter, the key takeaway.
Absolutely. And understanding this stuff is, well, it's pretty crucial for just getting by in the modern world. You think about steel in skyscrapers, that's metal.
Right.
But then the oxygen you're breathing right now, that's a nonmetal.
Mm.
Carbon, the basis of all life, also a nonmetal.
Mm-hmm.
So grasping these differences helps you appreciate everything from your smartphone to medical tech, even just like how cooking works. It's the basic building blocks.
Okay, let's get into it then. How they look, how they feel, how they react, the whole picture.
Right. Let's maybe start with a quick look back historically, because our whole civilization's story is tied up with these materials. Early humans mostly used what was around, nonmetals like stone, wood.
Sure, makes sense.
But then came this huge shift discovering metals. Copper, maybe around 9,000 BCE. That changed everything.
How so?
Tools, weapons, farming. Then bronze, which is copper mixed with tin. Then iron. These weren't just new materials. They kicked off whole ages. The Bronze Age, the Iron Age. Huge leaps forward.
Wow. And much later, people like Lavoisier helped figure out the science behind it all, right? How we classify this massive variety of stuff.
Exactly. Scientists look at a shiny spoon, a wooden table, a copper wire, and they see patterns. They classify them based on their properties, physical ones, chemical ones. It's like sorting the ingredients of the universe.
Okay, so let's talk about those properties. If you need to pick a material, say for a tool or a wire, what tells you which one to use? You mentioned physical properties.
Yeah, there are about 7 key ones that give us big clues right away.
Let's start with a luster. Shininess.
Right. Most metals, if you cut them or polish them, they have this characteristic metallic luster. Gold, silver, aluminum, they gleam.
Why, though? What makes them shiny?
It's down to their atoms, specifically their electrons. Metals have these electrons that aren't tightly bound. They can move around freely, like a sea of electrons, and they're really good at reflecting light that hits them. Bounce, back comes the shine.
Okay. And nonmetals?
Generally pretty dull. Wood, plastic, sulfur, charcoal. No metallic sparkle there.
But there are always odd ones out, aren't there?
Always. Iodine, for example, it's a nonmetal, but its crystals do have a shine. And graphite, that's carbon, a nonmetal, it's shiny enough you might mistake it for a metal just by looking.
Huh. Okay, so shine is one thing. What about, like, toughness? Hardness?
Good one. Hardness is basically how well a material resists being scratched or dented or cut.
Hmm.
Most metals score high here. Iron, steel, copper, tungsten, they're hard. They're robust.
Which is why we use them for tools, buildings. Things that need to last.
Precisely. That strength is key.
And nonmetals are usually the opposite. Soft.
Often, yeah. Sulfur's a powder. Graphite in your pencil is soft enough to write with. But here's where it gets really interesting.
Uh-oh. Exception time?
The biggest one. Diamond. It's a form of carbon, so it's a nonmetal. But it is the hardest natural substance we know of, period.
Wow. A nonmetal is the hardest thing. That's wild.
Isn't it? And on the flip side, some metals are surprisingly soft. Sodium, potassium, you can cut them with a knife.
Oh, seriously?
Yep. And mercury is a metal that's famously liquid at room temperature. So, general rules, but always exceptions.
Okay, next property.
Let's talk malleability. This is the ability to be hammered or rolled into thin sheets without breaking.
Like an ironsmith banging on hot metal or making aluminum foil.
Exactly that. The word actually comes from malleus, the Latin for hammer. It's this property that lets us shape metal so effectively. Think about how much we rely on sheet metal for cars, appliances, roofing.
Why can metals do that?
Again, it's the atomic structure. The atoms in metals are arranged in layers that can slide over each other when you apply force. Like cards in a deck.
Okay, they slide instead of shattering.
Right. Whereas nonmetals, like coal or sulfur, are generally brittle. Hit them with a hammer and they just break apart.
And wasn't there a crazy fact about gold?
Yes. Malleability superstar.
Just
1 gram of gold, tiny amount, can be hammered out into a sheet covering 1 whole square meter.
That's incredible. Just 1 gram.
It is. And related to that is ductility.
Ductility.
The ability to be drawn out into thin wires without breaking. This is absolutely vital for, Well, electricity.
Because of copper wires in the walls. And aluminum for power lines.
Exactly. Metals excel at this.
Yeah.
Those same atomic layers that allow sliding for malleability also allow stretching for ductility.
And nonmetals, I'm guessing, not so much.
Nope. Try stretching sulfur, it just snaps. They aren't ductile.
And the gold fact again?
Oh, yeah, for ductility, too. That same single gram of gold, you can stretch it into a wire over 2 kilometers long.
2 kilometers? That's insane.
It really highlights the property. And it's why tungsten, another metal, is used for those super thin filaments in old incandescent light bulbs. It's ductile and strong even when thin.
Okay, what else? How about sound?
Good point. Sonority. That's the property of making a ringing sound when you strike it.
Like bells. Temple bells, school bells. They ring.
Exactly. They're made of metals, often bronze, which is an alloy. When struck, the metal vibrates in a way that produces that clear, sustained ringing sound. It travels well through their structure.
And nonmetals.
Drop a piece of wood or tap on plastic, you get more of a dull thud, right?
Yeah, definitely not a ring.
So nonmetals are generally non-sonorous. Another clear difference.
Okay, two big ones left, I think. Heat and electricity.
Yes, conduction. Let's start with heat. Metals are typically very good conductors of heat.
Like the bottom of my cooking pan, usually copper or aluminum.
Perfect example. It's those free electrons again. They zip around, carrying heat energy quickly through the metal. That's why the whole pan base heats up evenly.
Right. And the handle is often wood or plastic because...
Because nonmetals, wood, plastic, air, are generally poor conductors of heat. We call them insulators.
So what does this all mean? It means the handle stays cool enough to hold while the pan gets hot. Simple but clever design based on these properties.
Exactly. Safety and function rolled into one.
And electricity, is it a similar story?
Very similar. Metals are generally excellent electrical conductors. Silver, copper, aluminum, gold, top of the list.
Free electrons doing their thing again.
Pretty much. They carry the electrical current easily through the metal.
And nonmetals are insulators here too. Rubber, plastic, glass. They don't conduct electricity.
Generally true. Their electrons are held tightly. They can't flow to make a current.
Let me guess. An exception.
The big one. Graphite. Remember, it's carbon, a nonmetal.
Yeah, the shiny one.
Well, it's also a good conductor of electricity. That's why it's used in pencil leads, though it's not actually lead. And crucially, in things like batteries and electrodes.
So not all nonmetals are electrical insulators. That's important.
Definitely shakes up the simple categories, doesn't it?
It does. Okay. So that's a good look at the physical side. How they look, feel, conduct things. What about how they, you know, react chemically?
Right. Let's shift gears to chemical properties. This is about how substances change and form new things when they react with other substances. Think rust, burning, things dissolving.
Okay. Let's start with metals again. How do they react with, say, the air, oxygen?
Metals generally react with oxygen to form metal oxides. You've seen this happen. Magnesium burns really brightly, forming white magnesium oxide powder.
Right.
Or iron, much more slowly, reacts with oxygen and moisture to form rust, which is iron oxide. Even copper gets that black coating when you heat it in air, copper oxide.
And these oxides, what are they like chemically?
Most metal oxides are basic in nature. If you dissolve them in water, they can turn red litmus paper blue. Like magnesium oxide in water makes magnesium hydroxide, which is a base.
Okay, basic oxides from metals. What about metals reacting with water?
That varies hugely. Some metals go absolutely wild in water. Others just sit there.
Like which ones?
Well, the super reactive ones are sodium and potassium. Drop them in cold water and they react vigorously. Fizzing, heat, sometimes the hydrogen gas they produce even catches fire.
Whoa. That sounds dangerous.
It is. That's why they had to be stored under kerosene or oil to keep them away from air and water.
Okay, so those are the extreme ones. What about others?
You've got moderately reactive ones. Magnesium reacts, but usually needs hot water or steam. Calcium reacts slowly with cold water. Then less reactive ones like zinc, iron, aluminum, they really only react with steam, and usually only when it's very hot.
And the ones that barely react at all.
That's your copper, silver, gold, platinum group. They don't react with water or steam.
Which is why they're good for jewelry and coins. They don't corrode easily.
Exactly. They stay shiny and stable for a long, long time.
Speaking of corroding, that leads us to rust, right?
Yes. Corrosion is the general term for metals getting damaged by reacting with their environment. Rusting is specific to iron and steel.
And you said it needs oxygen and water?
Crucially, yes. You need both. Air alone won't do it. Pure water without dissolved oxygen won't really do it either. You need oxygen and water or moisture together to get that reddish-brown, flaky, hydrated iron oxide we call rust.
That's a common mistake, thinking just one is enough.
It is. And because rust is so damaging, we have lots of ways to prevent it.
Like painting things. Or oiling them.
Yep. Painting, oiling, greasing create a barrier. Then there's galvanization coating iron with zinc. The zinc corrodes instead of the iron.
Sacrificial protection, kind of?
Sort of, yeah. Alloying is another way. Mixing iron with other metals like chromium and nickel makes stainless steel, which resists rust much better. And electroplating, coating with another metal.
It's amazing how we fight it. Isn't there that old pillar in India?
The Iron Pillar of Delhi.
Yes, remarkable. Over 1,600 years old, and it's resisted rusting incredibly well. Its specific composition, with high phosphorus content, seems to have created a protective surface layer. Still studied today.
Wow. And rust is for iron, but other metals corrode too. They do. Copper develops that green layer, called a patina. Think of the Statue of Liberty.
Right. It wasn't always green.
Exactly. Silver turns black. That's tarnishing, reacting with sulfur in the air. But aluminum does something neat. It corrodes slightly, forming a very thin, tough, invisible layer of aluminum oxide.
And that stops further corrosion.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It seals the surface and protects the metal underneath. That's why aluminum lasts well outdoors.
Fascinating. Okay, let's flip to nonmetals now. How do they react chemically? With oxygen first.
Nonmetals also react with oxygen, usually when you heat them, forming nonmetal oxides.
Examples.
Burn sulfur. You get sulfur dioxide, has that sharp choking smell.
What?
Burn carbon, like charcoal. There's plenty of oxygen. You get carbon dioxide. Not enough oxygen. Get poisonous carbon monoxide.
Right. Got to be careful with burning things indoors. Absolutely. And some are super reactive. White phosphorus just catches fire on its own in air, forming phosphorus pentoxide.
Okay. And these nonmetal oxides, you said metal oxides were basic. What about these? These are generally the opposite. They tend to be acidic. Dissolve them in water, and they form acids. They'll turn blue litmus paper red.
Like sulfur dioxide making acid rain.
Exactly. Sulfur dioxide plus water makes sulfurous acid. Carbon dioxide plus water makes carbonic acid. That's the fizz in soda water.
But are they all acidic? Any exceptions here, too?
Good question. Yes, there are neutral non-metal oxides. Carbon monoxide is one. Nitric oxide. Even water HO is an oxide of hydrogen, a nonmetal, and it's neutral.
Ah, okay. So mostly acidic, but some are neutral.
Got it. Mm. What about nonmetals reacting with water?
Generally, they don't react with water under normal conditions. Much less reactive with water than many metals are.
But wasn't there something about phosphorus?
Ah, yes. The storage exception. Remember, white phosphorus catches fire in air?
Yeah.
Well, because it doesn't react with water, but does react violently with oxygen, it's actually stored underwater to keep it safe from the air.
Clever. Using its non-reactivity with water to prevent its reactivity with air.
Exactly. And there is another important non-metal reaction with water, chlorine. What does chlorine do?
It does react partially with water, forming some acids.
No.
But why is this useful? Well, this reaction is what allows chlorine to kill germs.
Ah, for disinfecting drinking water and swimming pools.
Precisely. A hugely important application of a non-metal specific reaction with water. Keeping us healthy.
Wow. Okay, that is a lot to take in. We've gone from shininess and hardness all the way to rust and acid rain.
We really have. Covering the key physical traits that let us distinguish them and choose them for jobs, and then the chemical reactions that define how they interact with the world.
So the big picture, the so what, it's that understanding these basic differences, metal versus non-metal, really unlocks why things are made the way they are, isn't it?
Absolutely. It lets you appreciate the materials around you.
Yeah.
From the steel holding up bridges to the silicon and computer chips, which is kind of in between a metalloid, but that's another story, to the nitrogen and oxygen making up the air.
Mm-hmm.
Metals and nonmetals are fundamental.
So maybe next time you pick up that cooking pan or even just, you know, take a breath, think about the materials involved. Consider the metals and nonmetals playing their unique roles, shaping our world, keeping things working, keeping us safe. Maybe look around and ask, why is this made of metal? Why is that made of plastic or wood?
Yeah, the answers are usually rooted in these very properties we've been talking about. It makes the world a bit less random, maybe.
Definitely more understandable. A great place to pause, I think.